Chapter 14. Puzzles. The peace was a familiar, comfortable thing, settling over the office like a cocoon. None of the telephones rang, and no one intruded on the tranquility as the clock on the wall ticked its way toward 8 o'clock in the evening. Since the station had been destroyed 4 days ago, none of the staff had set foot inside the door for more than a few minutes. They were too busy digging and clearing the debris, repairing the lines and patrolling the route. Paperwork had been piled haphazardly on the floor, leaving 4 desks clear, which Ed had pushed together. Scattered across their surface, scratching the wood and coating everything in dust, were the pieces of the array they had found at the site. Ed leant over them like a supplicant at an altar of knowledge, his eyes burning from his ceaseless scrutiny. Some were as big as his palm, while others were no larger than his thumbnail. And finding the pattern was like trying to read in the dark. Impossible. On the other side of the room, his feet propped on Hawkeye's desk, Al sat, reading through a stack of books. Each one was blue-covered and scarlet-bound, and they were only a fraction of the tomes that matched the vague description he had given at Hugh's house. Despite the futility of the search, he carried on intently. After all, their quest for the stone had been just as much of a needle in a haystack. And they'd come through in the end. Al wasn't about to let sheer odds dissuade him. "Damn it!" Ed looked up at Winry's outburst, watching her scrabble on the floor for a moment. She had declined Shezka's invitation to go out for dinner, instead choosing to sit with the Elrics and help whenever she could. At that particular moment, she was assuaging her curiosity about one of Hawkeye's old revolvers. The trigger mechanism was in pieces and had been the victim of Winry's gentle exploration until only a few minutes ago. "Did either of you see where that went?" she asked, scowling at the floorboards. "What was it?" Al put the book he had been reading down, carefully slipping a piece of paper in between the pages. Both he and Edward had been brought up to respect books, and neither of them dog-eared the papers or put them down with their covers splayed. "A spring, about this big." Winry held her fingers a quarter of an inch apart, and flicked her hair over her shoulder. "It was carrying too much tension, which was why the safety hammer was so stiff. When I took the casing off, it popped out." "It's over by the door." Ed's answer was perfunctory, and he didn't miss the gleam of doubt in Winry's eyes as she moved towards where he'd pointed. Her fury at his behavior was still fresh in both their minds, and neither one had bothered to apologize. Al could drop hints as much as he wanted, but Winry wouldn't take back what she had said, and Ed knew he couldn't say that he was sorry for any of his actions. If he did, he wouldn't mean it. In the end, there was nothing he wouldn't do a second time around if faced with the same choices. Now they had settled into a rigid, uneasy truce. The incident hadn't been mentioned since, and Ed was glad that no one had brought it up again. Just because he knew that he had done the right thing didn't make the pain he had caused any more bearable. With a small sound of relief, Winry grabbed the small coil of wire, cradling it in her palm as if it were the most precious of gems. She returned to the cloth that she had the gun parts spread out on before settling back to her task. In the beginning, she had tried to help both Ed and Al, but it was pretty obvious that her heart wasn't in it. At least this way, one of them was having some fun. Straightening up, Ed rolled his shoulders, wincing as the tension bit and boiled in his muscles. How long had he been working on this? The days had merged into one unsteady stream with the array haunting his dreams as well as his waking moments. He ate when he remembered to, or when either Al or his loudly protesting stomach made it a priority. Otherwise, he was living off of caffeine and the ceaseless gnawing of the unsolved problem in his mind. More than once, he had thought about clapping his hands and letting the wash of alchemy put the pieces back together. If it was done with care, the design would probably still be visible. But something warned him against trying it. Carmine wasn't a fool, and it would be just his luck for her to somehow rig the shattered array to react badly to any other alchemy. That left him struck with this agonizing puzzle, and his patience was rapidly wearing thin. "I'm going to get some fresh air," he muttered, huffing out an annoyed breath as he forced himself away, "before I go insane." Al shot him a quick glance over the top of his book that suggested he was about 10 years too late for that, but nodded anyway. "You'll be just outside the door, right?" "Up on the roof, and no, don't come with me." He held out a hand as Al started to get up to follow him. "Please?" Winry looked up from what she was doing, watching him with thoughtful blue eyes for a moment before she reached up and tugged Al's t-shirt, making him sit down again. "Just be back in 20 minutes, okay, Ed? If you're not, we'll come looking for you." He tried to see any sign of guile in her eyes, but her face was open and serious, and he realized the offer for what it was. Winry may not apologize, but she could at least bring herself to see things from his point of view. She might hate his evasion and silence about what had happened after he had brought Al's body back, but this was a compromise, another attempt at a ceasefire. 20 minutes of solitude seemed too good to be true, and he nodded his quick thanks before hurrying out the door and taking the nearest steps 2 at a time. The air was brilliantly cool, all diamond edges and frost crystals. Ed sucked in a deep breath, feeling it fill his lungs unimpeded. A stiff wind was plucking the leaves off of the trees, and glimmers of ruby and gold darted through the darkness. It was a night to be alive, to feel the thrill of air on his skin and watch twilight draw its curtain across the sky. With idle fingers, Ed reached up and undid his braid, breathing a small sigh of relief as his hair unwound, shedding some of the tension. His body felt taut, thrumming with things he couldn't identify. Since that night at Hugh's house, the world seemed to have ground to a halt. No other dreams had entered his sleep, although the memory was so tangible that he could slip back into it at any moment. Jasmine and lavender, sweet and warm, still teased his nose, and more than once he thought he heard laughter and the gurgle of water in the hush of the office. Yet every time the images unfolded in his mind, a bout of grief would fill his heart. The emotion wasn't his own, but it was still powerful enough to cause him pain, and he was sure the others had noticed his mercurial moods swinging more fiercely than before. One moment he would be happy and at peace, the next he could barely speak for the darkness that surrounded him. Hughes had gently suggested that it might be a natural reaction to his impending death, but that simply wasn't the case. That strange metropolis, that desert city, had been a place of joy to the voice in his mind, and it hurt for it to be recalled in such vivid detail. Since he had awoken and realized the truth, he had felt as though he stood on the tip of an iceberg. What he had thought was a one-dimensional mystery had become something bigger and much more complex. All he saw was the tip, and beneath the surface was a vaulted cathedral of an enigma that stretched for miles into the depths. His brain literally whirled with theories, but there was never any response to his inward questions. It made him feel foolish and resentful, that silence. If hearing voices was considered a sign of madness, then what did trying to strike up a conversation mean? Running a hand through his loose hair, he walked towards the edge of the roof. There was a railing all the way around, a half-hearted effort to stop anyone from jumping off, and Ed braced his forearms against it to look out across the city. He could see the floodlights over at the station, and knew that it must be nearly finished by now. He could see the flash of alchemy as they melded the last portions of the track. It wouldn't be long before the trains were flowing back and forth once more. He and Al had both offered to help, but Mustang had decided against it. For one thing, Ed's vastly differing alchemy would draw unwanted attention from the other military personnel. Besides, as everyone felt they had to point out to him several times a day, he wasn't on active duty. So he'd grabbed the fragments of the array before anyone could object and ensconced himself in the office with Al as his ever-watchful babysitter. A tired chuckle drifted up to him on the wind, and he looked down to see the others trapezing across the square and back towards the office. Hawkeye was on point, marching along as though the amount of untouched paperwork in the office was preying on her mind. Havoc and Fury walked behind, turning now and again to talk to Breida and Fallman. The smoke from Havoc's cigarette was being whipped away from the glowing tip, and Ed wrinkled his nose at the familiar scent. In their wake was Alex Armstrong, talking quietly to Hughes and Mustang. Unlike the others, their faces were serious and worried. Hughes was frowning, murmuring a reply to the Major's question, while Roy stared at the ground beneath his pacing feet. His shoulders were slumped and his head bowed, as if the strain was finally getting to him. Ed sighed, pulling back from the edge of the building and ignoring the flutter of butterflies in his stomach, squashing them ruthlessly. It annoyed him how easily his lips could recall the pressure and taste of Mustang's kiss. His skin told lies, reenacting the warm curl of fingers around his hip and a splayed hand across his back, holding him in place. He had been helpless then, too engrossed in everything that was Roy to think of anything but the warmth and presence and feel of him. The fact that the man could make him so vulnerable should have him terrified. But he found himself craving it, longing for another few heartbeats where there was nothing in the world but that pleasure and longing. Whatever was happening between them might be complicated, but Ed knew it was the most straightforward thing in his life right now. "Not that it matters!" His mutter was bitter in the night, as cold as the air around him. Nothing else had been said since. It was almost as if Mustang was happily fooling himself that nothing had changed, that he hadn't lost control and reacted instinctively to Ed's teasing. If his memories had been any less clear, Ed could easily have convinced himself that what had happened was nothing but a fantasy. Roy had somehow stepped back behind the wall of his superiority, and the emotional distance was a tangible thing. And yet, in some things, he had changed. The day the station had been destroyed, Roy had demanded a full report on what had happened at the gate, and what Ed was currently experiencing. It was an order Ed stubbornly chose to ignore, and he had been waiting for the verbal reprimand ever since. Yet, there had been nothing. Ed scowled, confused by yet another puzzle that the man presented him with. Perhaps he was just too busy to check his paperwork? He scowled, pushing the thoughts of Roy ruthlessly away as he sat down on the cool roof and leant back on his elbows. His 20 minutes was probably already gone, and it wouldn't be long before someone interrupted his solitude. He might as well make the most of the little time he had left before he had to get back to that stupid array. The breeze raised goosebumps on his skin and whipped his hair across his face. He ignored the chill seeping into his bones and the sharp grit that dug into his elbows as he turned his face up to the night sky and closed his eyes. He hated feeling this incapable. The array was just part of the whole thing. Somehow everything was interconnected, from Carmine to the voice in his head. At first he had thought it was coincidence that had taken him to the gate and left the light embedded within him. He had thought he was just an available host to shelter the dying illumination. But the more he considered it, the more he realized that it was almost by design. The voice was another fragment of the mystery. It treated him like a child would treat a guardian. It was dependent on him. But it also had a vast amount of power at its disposal, a source of strength that seemed to grow by the moment. There were times, often on the cusp of sleep and wakefulness, when Ed wondered if he was truly controlling his own body anymore, or if something else was subtly asserting its mastery over him. Then there was the other presence, and the faint sense of recognition. Sometimes he felt as though something had been waiting for this time, this moment, for an eternity. As though something had been patiently charting the centuries toward the culmination of this, whatever this was. Some people in that situation might decide it was something to do with fate or destiny, but that was a load of shit. To put some higher being in control of your life was to acknowledge you were helpless. You had a path, you walked it, and you took whatever the future dealt you. There was no way he was going to believe that. It didn't work for him. He had choices, and he made them. It just felt, right now, as if his life was shattered. It had become a series of isolated, separate fragments, and no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't find the connection between one and the next. He didn't know enough of the big picture to see how they fit together. Just like the array downstairs. There were just too many pieces. Inspiration dawned, a hot, white light in his mind as one puzzle finally solved itself. His eyes snapped open, and Ed let a rough laugh of disbelief as the idea blossomed in his mind. Of course, he'd been so absorbed in trying to work out the pattern of the array that he hadn't really paid attention to the pieces. Some were tiny, too small to have been destroyed by the tumbling rubble. To be no bigger than an inch across, they must have been near the source of the explosion. They might even form part of the trigger. Bolting to his feet, he pulled the door open, stumbling blindly down the stairs as one design after the other etched itself across his consciousness. He rounded the corner and nearly collided with Ed, only avoiding him by quickly twisting out of the way. His younger brother's eyes widened in surprise, but he must have been able to read something in Edward's expression because he didn't bother to ask any questions as he hurried along behind. The door to the office banged open as Ed hurried to the desk, barely acknowledging the others as he quickly sorted out the chunks with feverish haste. It was like removing the obscuring mist from mirrored pain, and he felt his heart thud harder as the picture began to make sense. He was dimly aware of the others watching him and a faint, crackling energy in the air. But he couldn't tear his eyes away as his fingers danced over the pieces, putting each in its place as though he'd known all along where they needed to go. Boss? Havoc's nervous murmur was hastily hushed, and Ed only just caught his frightened words. But half of those rocks are moving by themselves! In that moment, Jean's statement didn't make sense, and Edward shoved it aside as he continued to work. Like a tsunami, unstoppable and immense, the energy began to flow through him and the fragments moved faster, shifted and jostling when he did little more than brush their cool stone faces. Uniforms rustled as some of the others straightened up, casting a wary glance around the room as they felt the strange pull of power too, a subtle tugging of invisible gossamer threads on the corners of each being. Ed could feel something like cobwebs brushing over his skin. It was enough to make him think he could pull away and step back, but he was already caught in the web, unable to do anything but his inexorable progress towards its heart. Something, a dull, throbbing warning began in the core of his mind. Like a hammer on a gong, it shimmered through his consciousness, and the one word was just loud enough to be heard over the orchestra of his thoughts. Danger! The last piece fell into place, and with a crack like a gunshot, those fragments melded together, fissures vanishing as though they had never been. A stab of pain bit into the inside of Ed's left wrist, and he winced in surprise, glancing down at the source. There was nothing there, not even a single bead of blood or minuscule scratch. Perhaps he had imagined it. Well, that was strange. Hugh's words shattered the stunned silence as everyone stared at the two array complexes on the table. Each was whole and unmarked by cracks or flaws. It was almost as if the explosion had never happened. They're not going to blow up again, are they? Fury's question was careful as he inched closer, pushing his glasses up his nose to examine the patterns. I know I'm not an alchemist, but that doesn't look like a normal array to me. A flicker of irritation coursed through Ed's frame, and he glanced in Mustang's direction, meeting that dark, cobalt gaze for a split second. Fury's caution was echoed in those depths, and with a sharp sigh he shook his head. It's inactive. So, what did it do, other than cause an explosion? Hawkeye asked, her brown eyes astutely analyzing the alien design. Ed knew that it was a deeply ingrained part of her training to assess the risks of a given situation, but he couldn't understand why her body was so taut, as if ready to leap away. They were all acting like there was a live bomb in the room. Even Al, for all his intellectual curiosity, was being careful not to get too close. With a quick gesture, he motioned to the two overlapping circles. The sigils were antagonistic, deliberately placed to tip the balance of energy through the pattern. At first glance, it looked like a clumsy design, poorly crafted. When it activated, even a novice alchemist could see that its effects would be disastrous. Yet, there was planning to this. It had been carefully etched with as many deliberate flaws as possible. On the ground in the station, it would have barely been noticeable, no bigger than 12 inches across. It could have been passed off as some doodle of graffiti on the platform. That's the trigger. It's designed to be activated with a tiny amount of energy that cascades and accumulates until the array overloads and explodes. Carmine would have had enough time to set it off and get away. We've had as many men as we can spare out looking for her, Hughes murmured quietly, half turning towards Mustang. So far, we're coming up with nothing. It's like she disappeared. Keep looking, Roy muttered, his order no less serious for its lack of force. I doubt she's left the city. What about that? Havoc asked, pointing to the larger series of concentric circles. They spanned several feet and were probably hidden away in one of the many corners of the station, out of plain sight. Ed shifted uncomfortably, looking at the triads that pointed towards a central point. It was similar to what he had inadvertently used on Mustang. Only the smaller arrays to the left and right, balancing and amplifying the flow, were different. When someone dies, their energy is released. That array was designed to channel their... He shrugged awkwardly. Spirits, or whatever you want to call it, towards one place. Strictly speaking, the explosion wasn't necessary. If she could get people to walk over this, it would suck the energy right out of them. They'd be unconscious in seconds and dead in a minute. Instead, she killed as many people as possible, and the design pulled in their energy as they died. Every face was a mixture of confusion and revulsion, and Ed realized that they couldn't understand the point of that strange violation. It seemed a pointless parlor trick without rhyme or reason. But they didn't know what he did. Falteringly, he began to speak, choosing his words with deliberate care. When Carmine polluted the gate with murdered souls, she didn't just corrupt the gate itself. She fed it. She pushed more energy through than was given back. That's part of how it was possible for the tainted things inside to tear apart the physical portal. He licked his lips, staring blindly at the arrays as he continued. Without the gate to contain any of the negative aspects of the darkness, like the hate or rage or anything like that, it latched onto her and used her like a puppet. She still seemed to have some of her own will, but most of it was the shadows talking. While she was in that plane, she was fine. All the energy from Amstris and wherever else that place is connected to was still flowing through some kind of rift. She had power there, and strength. And here she's got none of that, Al murmured quietly, following his brother's halting explanation with ease. No more than any normal alchemist. Nothing like the kind of strength that the gate would be used to, Ed pointed out. In Amstris, there isn't much free energy. Alchemical arrays pull the power from the gate itself to perform a transmutation. At the station, she was freeing the energy in living people to use, not in alchemy, but as fuel. The part of the gate that's inside her is no longer connected to that plane and can't get the strength it needs, nor can it just use an array to channel it into this realm. It has to take power directly from things in Amstris. There was silence for a moment. A mute, puzzled horror that seemed to fill the room with its cloying density. Armstrong's mustache was quivering with suppressed disgust, and Breida looked sickly pale. Havoc's cigarette tip moved wildly as he chewed on it, barely noticing as he shredded the paper with his teeth. Even Hawkeye, normally resolute, even when exhausted, was letting her fingertips idly brush the butt of her gun. "Tomorrow morning, first thing, we step up the search," Mustang said firmly, quickly taking in the mood of the room. "I want everyone here by 7. Dismissed." One by one, the others filed out, talking in low voices among themselves. Ed didn't miss one or two wary glances that came his way, and he tried to ignore them as Al picked up the books and Winry quickly reassembled Hawkeye's old gun. Mustang had slipped back into his office, shutting the door firmly behind him, and Ed glanced at the polished hardwood portal before turning away. "Brother, are you coming?" He looked up to see Al and Winry standing by the door, both waiting for him to join them. "I'll catch you up, Al. I need to get rid of this." He jerked his head toward the array meaningfully. "You've got a key, haven't you?" Al nodded. "I'm going to walk Winry back to Shezka's. Then I'll see you at home." Ed flinched slightly, but nodded in agreement. "Give me an hour, and don't worry. The bastard's here if anything goes wrong." He watched Al go, pondering his last words. He should have known that Al had taken their change in living arrangements too easily. Home was something they didn't have, and they definitely weren't going to find it at Mustang's place. Just because they'd both been given spare keys didn't make it a permanent arrangement. Roy was just trying to make the doctor's stupid constant supervision order a little easier. And he knew he couldn't let in one Elric without the other. They were a bit of a package deal, at least for now. Drumming his fingertips on the table, he glanced back at Mustang's door, feeling something uncomfortable gnawing at his stomach. When he had explained about Carmine's need for strength, he had tried to be as vague as possible. But if there was one person who might draw parallels between Carmine's actions and Ed's recent behavior, it was Roy. It was brutally simple to maintain the thick-headed stubbornness of denial. But if someone started asking him direct questions, Ed knew he wouldn't be able to hide anything of this magnitude from them. He might be able to fob them off with vague excuses, but it wouldn't work forever. He had the distinct feeling that, now the station repairs were nearly complete, there would be nothing to distract the others, least of all Roy. With a sigh of frustration, he clapped his hands together and pressed them quickly to the stonework on the desk. Shoving the power through in one wanton burst, it was too much for the array to handle, and the sharp, controlled explosion shattered it into dust, sending clouds of it billowing around to land in a fine layer on every surface. Ed grimaced at the mess, but shrugged. At least the array was gone, even if Hawkeye did complain at the mess. "I suppose I should thank you for saving my life." Ed paused, his expression guarded as he glanced across at Mustang. He hadn't heard the door open, but there he stood. His sleeves were still rolled up, and his crumpled shirt was half undone, despite the coolness of the night. His body language screamed out loud and clear how tired he was, but there was nothing sleepy about his eyes. They were fixed on the tumbler in his hand, watching the hazy swirl of amber liquid at the bottom of the glass. There wasn't enough alcohol to impair his intelligence or cloud his mind, Ed realized, but just enough to take the edge off his whirling thoughts. It was a sad fact that he watched Mustang's drinking habits almost as closely as everyone else in the office. He doubted the Brigadier General would appreciate any of his subordinates' concern, but that didn't mean they didn't keep a subtly watchful eye on him at times. "I've saved your life 100 times since I came to Central," Ed reported with a smug grin. "Can you be a bit more specific?" Mustang smirked, looking up through the fall of hair across his forehead as he took a sip. "You said it yourself. Carmine didn't need that explosion. If she could get her victims to touch the array, they'd be unconscious in seconds and dead within minutes. That's what happened to me when I touched the array on your forehead, isn't it?" Ed swallowed, The tension that had departed with the solution of the array sweeping back in like a tide. No quick, easy lies were evident, and he scowled at the floor as the silence grew. Eventually he turned away, tugging a hairband from his pocket and clumsily braiding his hair back into place. "I told you that was an accident." "And I believe you," Mustang replied softly. "But that doesn't change the fact that it happened. Carmine's using this alchemy because part of what was beyond the gate is now in her, and it needs energy. It's not exactly a leap of the imagination to realize that you did the same thing for the same reason, Full Metal." "I didn't kill anyone!" The retort was furious, practically spat from his lips as he spun around and advanced on Roy. "I'm not using people like she is!" He was close enough to smell the smooth liquor in the glass and see the grim determination that etched itself into Mustang's face. This wasn't an issue that he was just going to forget about. "You don't realize you're doing it, do you?" Roy asked quietly, sadly. "I wonder who that makes more of a puppet, you or her. At least she's aware of her actions." It was like being doused in cold water, and Ed blanched as he stepped back a touch. "What are you talking about? I'm not doing anything." Everyone's noticed it and commented on it. Hughes, Hawkeye, Fallman, Havoc, even Armstrong. They've all noticed the changes in their energy when you're around them. Sometimes they're so awake that it's a buzz, like a high. Others, they're almost too exhausted to move. You're using them, just like Carmine drained power from her victims. You just don't know you're doing it. Ed shook his head mutely, backing away until he bumped into the desk. "Like when?" he demanded, fear and uncertainty making him vicious. "Give me one example." Mustang sighed, putting his glass down on the desk with a clank, as he looked Edward in the eye. "Right now, Ed. When I was walking here, I was thinking of nothing but getting to bed and sleeping for a week. As soon as you barged in the office, it felt as if I'd drunk a pot of espresso. Then, within moments, you were reconstructing the array, and you didn't even notice the power you were using to do it. Smaller arrays were drawing themselves all over the desk, moving the pieces before you even touched them, and it was like someone was draining away all that new energy I'd found. It's been happening ever since the station blew up." Ed's shoulders were hunched, and his gold head bowed low as he stared at the floor, trying to remember any conscious decision he had made to use an array like Carmine's. He screwed his eyes up tight, practically yelling a demand for an explanation into the caverns of his mind, but his only response was silence. "You don't have to tell me everything, Ed, but can you tell me if I'm right?" Roy asked gently. "Did something find a place for itself in you the same way it did in Carmine?" "Does it matter?" he asked quietly, moving his shoulders up and down in feigned indifference. "If I'm doing the same thing she is, it makes me dangerous. The reason isn't important in the end, is it?" He jumped when Mustang's hand reached out, cupping his chin and forcing his face upwards until he could get a clear look into his eyes. The expression on Roy's face was angry, but it wasn't the cool, distant annoyance of a superior. It was closer than that, hotter, and Ed found himself unable to look away. "In case you haven't realized it, Full Metal, you've always been a risk to yourself and others. I don't want to know so that I can decide whether to lock you up or hand you over to Lab 5. I want to know so that I at least have some idea how to help you." The grip on his jaw loosened slightly, and Ed swallowed as the pad of Mustang's thumb brushed along his skin, catching on stubble. It was an unconsciously comforting gesture, and he felt himself lean into it before his rational mind could stop him. It was hard to trust him, this man who had spent years manipulating everyone around him with ease. It was difficult to tell where the mind games, tricks, and deceptions ended and honesty began. It was tempting to conform to Roy's suspicions, to give him this one small victory for the tiny relief it would bring. But Ed couldn't bring himself to confess it. He had spent too long watching Mustang wind people around his finger until they flexed to his every demand and wish. There was no way he was going to be one of them, kowtowing to his every need for knowledge. With a quick shake of his head, Ed pulled himself back, ignoring the brief glimmer of hurt in Roy's eyes as his hand fell back to his side. It was like a game of chess, and with checkmate being avoided, Ed could only wait for the next attack. He watched through his lashes, deliberately shielding himself from direct looks as Roy turned away and grabbed his glass, draining it in one quick motion. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand before setting the tumbler back and reaching out to grab his coat. "All right, Ed, if that's the way you want this to be, you don't have to tell me anything. But if you get into trouble or you need to talk, I'll still listen." Ed twitched in surprise. He couldn't help it. Surrender. Well, that was fucking unexpected. Mustang didn't like secrets. Knowledge to which he was unaware was like a waiting trap for him, and he'd never tolerated being kept in the dark before. It was a complete turnaround on his normal behavior, and Ed felt his tension increase as Roy flicked off the light and opened the office door. Without a backwards glance, he followed the older man, ignoring the ring of his uneven footsteps through the mostly empty corridors of Central Command. He wanted to ask what had changed, to demand that Mustang behave as he usually would, rather than like he gave a damn. Smug and superlicious, Ed could deal with, but this? This actually made him believe that the bastard cared. The thought sat badly with him, making him feel undefended and vulnerable. Still, if he asked, it would open up the discussion afresh, and Ed would rather it stay resolutely closed. "I'm trusting you, Full Metal," Roy said over his shoulder, his voice firm. Ed couldn't distinguish any trace of doubt in it, or any notion that Roy was putting faith in him against his better judgment. "I'm trusting you to tell me everything I need to know to keep people safe, before the danger gets too great." He grimaced to himself, running a hand through his hair. "A lot of people would say we've already got to that point. Just bear that in mind, Ed." It was a gentle warning, Ed realized. He could see it in the way the man's shoulders slumped. Mustang could lie and twist the truth like a pro when he was standing to attention in front of a superior or handling the press. But in unguarded moments, with those close to him, his body added automatic legitimacy in its nuances. Hughes had pointed it out once, years ago, when Ed had asked how so many people could trust a man whom everyone knew was always out for the next promotion and the next step up. Mace had just grinned and told him to open his eyes. Roy could lie with words and spin the truth when he knew the world was watching. But in moments like this, he couldn't help but give himself away. This gesture, whatever it was, rang true. Whatever Mustang was trying, it was a genuine attempt, and Ed knew a step in the right direction when he saw it. "She won't do it again," he said, quiet and certain, slowing his pace as Roy stopped and turned to look at him with puzzled eyes. "The life she took will be enough to keep her going, unless she forces a confrontation of some kind to drain her energy." It was a test, in a way, to see if Roy really could leave an unsolved mystery alone. He could see the questions racing through Mustang's mind, lining up on his tongue to be voiced. Normally, the demand for answers would have been instinctual, but with a visible effort, the man held them back and nodded in acknowledgement of the point. "I'll take your word for it." They carried on walking back in silence, each lost in their own thoughts. Ed kept glancing to the man at his side, too aware of him to ignore him completely. He had felt many things in Mustang's presence, from lust to a rage so strong he thought it would kill him, but never this. Now there was a gentle comfort. It was fragile, and could all too easily be crushed in one careless moment. But it was something Ed hadn't experienced before. It was as if Roy was trying to show him that he could let his guard down, and it left Ed wondering why. If he refused to speak about what happened at Hugh's house, then it couldn't be an attempt to move forward in their strange, uncertain relationship, could it? Or perhaps this was his way of showing that things could be different, and that it wasn't always a situation of order and obey. With a sigh of frustration, Ed shook his head. All he knew for certain was that he had solved one problem tonight, only to find one far more complex in the shape of Roy Mustang.